The meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will now come to order. Time, Mr. McManus, please.
7:13.
Thank you, sir. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on August 17th, 2017. Faxing to three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunterdon County Democrat, Hunterdon Review, and Express Times. Posting on the district website, the main bulletin board, in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school. And finally, faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Mr. McManus, may we please have a roll call, sir?
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes, here.
Mrs. DeMurley.
Here.
Dr. Ford.
Here.
You don't work in air conditioning.
Mrs. McHugh.
Here.
Mr. Malloy.
Here.
Mrs. Olasky. Mrs. Rodogada.
Here.
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Here.
Ms. Grant.
Here.
We have a call.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Malloy, would you please lead the board in the Pledge of Allegiance this evening?
Certainly.
I can't hear them.
Pledge of Allegiance. To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Vanderhoff, would you serve as the process guardian for tonight's meeting, please?
Sure.
Thank you. I would like to move to the report of the superintendent of schools, and within that report, we have a special presentation this evening with Dr. Nash. He will go over our annual HIB training for the Board of Education, but I'd like to turn over the program at this moment to Mrs. Goad. Mrs. Goad?
Thank you very much, Ms. Grant. Good evening, everyone, members of the board and members of the public. Thank you for being here tonight. It is my pleasure to introduce to you David Nash. He is the Legal One Director at the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association Foundation for Educational Administration. The Legal One program, where they do a lot of training and provide different opportunities for school staff members. David is always our go-to whenever we have any HIB training needs or any questions. And tonight he'll be presenting to us an overview and an update to the HIB legislation, as well as other information pertaining to HIB. So thank you very much for being here tonight.
Thank you, everyone. It's a real pleasure for me to have a chance to be here with you once again to talk about some of the latest developments and some of the essential elements of New Jersey's Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. This is an issue, as we know, that is constantly evolving. The state of New Jersey has put in place one of the most comprehensive anti-bullying laws in the nation, and it's a law that has helped thousands of kids, but it's a law that's not without its complications. It is a challenging law at times, and we do want to make sure that we fully understand the law. We want to make sure that we fully understand the requirements for all school districts. We want to make sure that we learn important lessons from some of the cases that have been decided, and we understand where New Jersey is going in the future on this law. So I want to touch on a few of the key elements of the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. I want to walk through some key cases that have been decided in the last year or two, and talk a little bit about some major changes that are under consideration that are very important for us all to understand, because those changes potentially will be adopted next month by the New Jersey State Board of Education with an expectation that school districts would be immediately implementing those changes, which is never easy in the middle of a school year. So we certainly want to make sure that everyone understands where those changes are going. It's a great pleasure to be here. Quick background on myself. Prior to serving in my current role as the director of Legal One, I served as legal counsel for the New Jersey principals and supervisors, and my role was representing school administrators when legal issues came up related to their employment. And legal issues are always with us. And certainly, looking at the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights, we have a number of potential issues that we need to be aware of. So I thought it would be important to spend a moment at the start of the presentation just reinforcing the definition that New Jersey has put in place and what some of the key elements are, so that we do have a common understanding when we hear potential claims of harassment, intimidation, or bullying. What are we really talking about? So New Jersey's definition focuses on a few key areas. We do need to have a student who has been singled out because of an actual or perceived characteristic. And we have seen over the last several years a number of cases that help us understand what we actually mean by an actual or perceived characteristic for a student. There is a long list, and really, there is no finite number to that list of potential characteristics that a student may have. I think most of us would understand that if a student is being singled out because of race, ethnicity, gender, disability, sexual orientation, and a number of other traditional categories where we have anti-discrimination laws, that of course those would be distinguishing characteristics. But we have seen in the case law over the last several years a clarification by our Commissioner of Education that the list of characteristics is much broader than that. And I'll touch on some of the cases to sort of illustrate how broadly we look at the issue of distinguishing characteristic. We must also have behavior that is causing substantial disruption or interference with the orderly operation of the school or the rights of students. And the phrase substantial disruption or interference is a phrase that is not always fully understood. So for example, a student who comes to school and is unable to focus on their education because they are embarrassed, they feel demeaned, they are fearful of another student, that certainly can constitute substantial disruption or interference, even if it's not obvious to the world. Even if the student appears to be in class functioning, when that student is fearful, when that student is distracted, when that student is unable to focus on their learning, we certainly can have substantial disruption or interference. On the other hand, we do have many children who are incredibly resilient, many children who perhaps may have been the targets of inappropriate behavior, and I will discuss some case law that tells us that there are cases where the same behavior happening to two different children could lead to two different results as far as a bullying investigation and determining whether or not the behavior constitutes bullying under New Jersey law. So it is important, as we consider some of the cases out there, that we recognize that each child is unique. The impact of behavior on one child may not be exactly the same as the impact of the same behavior on another child. And the result of an investigation may not be exactly the same, even if we see similar behavior happening across multiple children. So a key part of our definition is looking at whether or not there was substantial disruption or interference, looking at whether or not through the victim's eyes, the victim is reasonably perceiving the behavior as motivated by some particular characteristic. So a key part of our bullying law is always trying to put ourselves in the shoes of the target, put ourselves in the shoes of that victim. What was that student perceiving? What was that student reasonably perceiving? We do occasionally have cases where you have a student who perhaps is oversensitive, who perhaps might perceive something as harmful when it really wasn't, when a reasonable student would not have considered this to be harmful behavior. So we do have to consider what a reasonable student who is a second grader would consider, what a reasonable student who's a middle school student would feel, what a reasonable high school student would feel. And that's the lens that we want to look through when we're looking at potential bullying issues. We certainly have bullying cases that involve students who are being demeaned because of an actual group or a perceived group that the student may be part of. And that is one of the categories that we see in a number of our cases. So a student who is being singled out, for example, because of actual or perceived sexual orientation, that certainly could be a basis for a bullying claim. And there are many other examples like that. You do need to have actual harm in order for us to find bullying. So as I walk through some of the cases, we do want to keep in mind that the behavior could be a single incident. In many other states, the definition of bullying says that we must have a pattern of behavior in order for something to constitute bullying. New Jersey has recognized that one incident could be serious enough, could be disruptive enough, could be hurtful enough, that single incident is enough for us to determine that we actually have bullying behavior under New Jersey law. So that's kind of a unique characteristic of our law in New Jersey that we don't see in every other state. And certainly our law encompasses behavior, of course, that happens in school, on school grounds, at school events, but it in many cases encompasses behavior that happens off school grounds. We have a growing number of incidents nationwide. This is not unique to New Jersey, but a growing number of cyberbullying incidents that are happening, where the actual behavior of the students in question is happening completely outside of school. But we know in many of those cases that the students are impacted, and it still has an impact on the student when he or she is back in school. And if we see that substantial disruption in school, even if the behavior happened completely outside of school, we certainly could have a case under the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. So our behavior could happen in school or out of school. It could be physical behavior. It could be behavior that is causing emotional harm to a student. It could be a gesture. It's a very broad law that encompasses lots of different behavior. We do, in the majority of cases where we have allegations of bullying in New Jersey, what we actually see when a thorough investigation is done, in the majority of cases we have seen that the issue is not actually bullying under our law. It is oftentimes a conflict between two students. And that's not unusual. Developmentally, kids will get into conflicts at the elementary, middle, and high school level. So for example, you might have students who are friends. One student lent a piece of property to another student. The student doesn't give it back. Now they get angry at each other. Now insults are traded, and both students know exactly what's driving the dispute. It has nothing to do with any bullying motivation. It has to do with a friendship that's gone bad. And we see that in a number of cases, where we have a mutual conflict in some cases where students are exchanging insults and we have inappropriate behavior, and we certainly have code of conduct issues, but in many of those cases we don't have the imbalance in power that we see when you have a bullying case that's going on. So that has been what we have seen in the majority of allegations of bullying, is behavior that in many cases is inappropriate but does not meet our Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights definition. Of course, we have seen thousands of cases that do meet the definition across the state of New Jersey. So those cases do exist. They are very serious and could have a devastating impact for a student when we actually have that bullying that occurs. So it's important that we understand the process where we have a potential bullying claim that's being investigated. So I thought it'd be useful to spend a moment just reinforcing the steps that everybody has to take when there is an allegation of bullying. So if a staff member suspects that a student might have been the victim of bullying, either they've seen something firsthand or they've heard something from a student, that staff member under New Jersey law is legally required that same day to report that allegation to the school principal. The school principal or their designee, if the principal is not in the building, needs to initiate an investigation, and that investigation is initiated by working with the anti-bullying specialist that's in place in that school. There are some cases that are very complicated. You might have a case that involves multiple students, that involves a lot of people who need to be interviewed, and it might be a case where the anti-bullying specialist needs help. So the principal does have the authority to appoint additional individuals to assist with any particular investigation that's going on. And we do see that from time to time where we need help, one person can't do the entire investigation. So that's an important part of the process. There are very specific timelines built into our process. The anti-bullying specialist has 10 school days to complete an investigation into a claim of bullying. The anti-bullying specialist has 2 additional school days to write a report outlining what their findings are regarding that allegation. That report has to be ultimately submitted to the superintendent of schools. Most districts, I know your district does this, will also involve the anti-bullying coordinator in receiving the report from the anti-bullying specialist that we have in each school. And a series of due process rights have to be followed throughout this process. So of course, a student who is accused of engaging in behavior that would amount to harassment, intimidation, or bullying has a right at some point in time to know what he or she is accused of doing, has a right to give their side of the story. a parent on either side, either the parent of the alleged aggressor or victim, has a right, if they disagree with the findings of the anti-bullying specialist, has a right to ask for a hearing before the Board of Education. So the process that we follow, the investigation is completed by the anti-bullying specialist, the report is submitted, ultimately makes its way to the superintendent, ultimately makes its way to the Board of Education. Once the Board of Education has been informed that there is a allegation and a finding, the parent is informed in writing, the parent on both sides, the alleged aggressor and victim, is informed in writing of that allegation and has the right, if the parent wants to have a hearing before the Board of Education. Once the parent is informed, and whether or not the parent asks for a hearing, at a subsequent board meeting, the board votes to affirm, reject, or modify the decision reached. Of course, New Jersey does include very strong due process protections, even beyond the school district. Parents would have a right to appeal a finding of a school district to the Commissioner of Education. So we do have extensive due process rights built in for the student, for the parents, throughout this process. And those steps have been carefully enshrined to make sure that we're protecting everybody's rights throughout the process. The parents are a critical part of this process. Parent has a right to know that an allegation of bullying has been levied against their child, or that their child may have been the victim of bullying. Principal is required to inform the parent of that fact. Parent has a right to share any information that he or she may have. So perhaps the parent is aware of some related behavior that happened outside of school that they've witnessed. That's important for the school district to know about that. Perhaps the parent is aware of some impact that the behavior has had. Their child is coming home every day and is very upset. That's relevant information for the school district to have. And parents really should share whatever you know about the alleged bullying incident and the potential impact that it might have had. That's very useful information for the school district to have in this process. Parents also, again, have that right, if they disagree with the decision, to appeal that decision. The bullying investigations that are being done sometimes get even more complicated. This is rare, but occasionally we'll have an issue where there is an allegation of criminal wrongdoing. So we have seen, you know, nationwide, for example, some cases where sexually explicit photos have been sent of a particular student. When that occurs, or we think that may have occurred, law enforcement has to be involved. And when law enforcement is contacted and made aware of potential criminal issues that are part of an investigation, law enforcement's investigation takes precedence over the school district's. So there are times, it might be frustrating, but in those occasional cases where there are potential criminal issues, law enforcement may ask a school district to suspend its investigation so that they can complete their law enforcement investigation first. And the school district then needs to honor that request and postpone completing its own investigation. So I know that if that ever occurs, there can be some frustration because there can be some delays in our process, but there are certainly good reasons for that. There are some lessons to be learned from cases out there, and I thought that I would cite a few interesting recent cases that I think give us some important lessons when we're looking at potential bullying issues. So one lesson to learn is that when we have cyberbullying incidents, it's critical that the school district engage in due diligence and do everything possible to determine who might have been involved in that issue. There have been many cases in New Jersey and nationwide where students or others have anonymously posted hurtful comments about students in our schools. And, you know, we see the comments that were posted, and everybody would agree, these comments that are being posted online certainly are hurtful, certainly meet the New Jersey definition, and would certainly qualify as bullying behavior. In some cases, we run into a problem because we can't figure out who made the comments. So there was a New Jersey case involving the Plumstead School District where the district tried everything it could think of. They reached out to law enforcement. They reached out to the social media site. They reached out to their technology experts. And they tried everything they could to figure out who the anonymous student was or person who was making comments about a particular child. Despite all their efforts in this particular case, the school district was not able to determine who was making the hurtful comments. So the school district was unable to classify the issue as an incident of harassment, intimidation, or bullying under New Jersey law because they didn't even know if it was one of their students. Frankly, it could have been anybody who was posting the comments online. And, you know, in this day and age, of course, kids have lots of social connections outside of the school district. So it's critical that school districts engage in due diligence, do everything possible to determine who is making comments when we have anonymous comments online. But there are times where we may not be able to figure out who the aggressor is, and in those cases, we can't label the behavior as harassment, intimidation, or bullying under New Jersey law. So that was an important case for folks to understand. We had another interesting case involving a school district nearby, Reddington School District. We had a case involving a middle school student who happened to be Asian. This student comes to school. The student is wearing a yellow t-shirt. Another student says to this student, "Why are you wearing that yellow t-shirt? You're Asian, you're already yellow." That certainly sounds like bullying behavior. It was very hurtful. There was a distinguishing characteristic. Everybody would agree that was inappropriate behavior and that would violate any district's code of conduct for how one student addresses another student. But the school district in this case did their investigation, spoke with the student who was the target. The student was very emphatic that he didn't think twice about it. It was not a big deal. It did not impact his education. The school district gathered other information to see if there was an impact on this particular student. And this was a unique student who was very resilient. School district determined that the student was not actually harmed in any substantial way by the comment, and determined that this was not bullying behavior because we didn't have a victim who was actually harmed in this particular case. And the commissioner upheld that finding. What the commissioner basically said was, you know your students best. You know better than anyone else whether the student has actually been harmed. Question?
I'm sorry, so in that particular circumstance, so who brought it to anyone's attention if it wasn't the student who was being targeted?
It was the parent of the student who was furious. The parents of the student found out what the comments were. They said, nobody says that to our child.
Okay.
And we don't. And frankly, the parents said, I don't care what my son says, this was bullying behavior. The student himself said that this did not have a significant impact. And the school district assessed the student, and in their judgment, the student did not suffer significant harm. This was a very resilient kid who, in their judgment, was okay. So parents were not happy. Parents appealed that decision, understandably. Right? I would have been just as furious as those parents were. But it was an important point that was made in that case, that not every student reacts the same way when they're the target. And some students may not actually be considered a victim, depending on the impact that the behavior has on that student. So I would caution everybody to be careful about reading that case, and don't overread that case. So the school district knew the child best and assessed the impact, but they didn't just rely on what the student said. So certainly you would also talk to that student's teacher to see, are we seeing an impact in the classroom? You would talk to the student's counselor. If you're counseling the student, are you seeing some impact? So you would look at other indicators to see whether this student has been harmed and perhaps is hiding the harm, because that does happen. Kids are victimized, they're embarrassed by it, they don't want to admit that it really was hurtful to them. So I think the important lesson is that the school district is going to be given some deference in the fact that you know your children best as long as you fully assess the potential impact that the case might have had. So that was an important case to sort of lay out.
So is there any guidance given to that student to say, even though this didn't rise to the level, it's still inappropriate?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, it was clearly a code of conduct violation. There was still discipline imposed in that case, which is really important. And parents need to understand that. Obviously, those comments were inappropriate. They were hurtful. And any school district's code of conduct would have provisions that say that's not acceptable behavior. So the consequence was still imposed for that student. And certainly in a case like that, you absolutely would need to impose a consequence. But it is important to appropriately identify whether it's harassment, intimidation, or bullying itself. So in that case, that was determined not to be HIV. I'll give you another example that was somewhat surprising to some of us. We had a case involving high school students where two high school girls were very concerned about their friend and the fact that their friend might have an eating disorder. So these girls, concerned about their friend, confront their friend. They let her know that they're worried about her. They're worried that she might have anorexia. She's very upset. She tells her friends she is fine. She does not have an eating disorder. They don't believe her. So these two girls then reach out to the boyfriend of their friend. And they say, we're really worried about our friend. You're her boyfriend. Can you try to help her? Can you talk with her about this issue? The boyfriend then responds and confronts his girlfriend about this. She is very upset. She is embarrassed. She feels demeaned. She files a claim under the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights that her friends have just embarrassed and demeaned her and bullied her. So this was an interesting case because in this case, the school district did an investigation, as they were required to do, determined that the two high school girls were acting with good intentions. They were trying to help their friend, but still determined that this was bullying under the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. And the commissioner on appeal upheld that finding and said this was still bullying. So this case surprised me, and what this case tells me is that we have raised the bar on what we expect students to do even when they're trying to help.
Is the general premise of this law, Mr. Nash, that the reaction dictates whether it's bullying and not the action?
The reaction is a huge part of this.
Kevin, we can't hear you.
Can you repeat your question?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, my question is, it would seem to me that this entire law is predicated on the reaction, not the action.
Well, it's the perception.
Yes.
And that to me makes this law deeply flawed.
I agree. This is a very challenging law to implement. It's very focused on the impact that the behavior has on a student. Now, there is that caveat in there that it needs to be a reasonable impact. And what the commissioner said was it was reasonable for a student in this case to feel embarrassed and demeaned when she was being confronted about a perceived eating disorder that she didn't have by her boyfriend. So in this particular case, what the commissioner basically said was the student should have chosen a different avenue to express their concern. They should have gone to an adult. They should have gone to a counselor, a teacher, an administrator. That counselor or teacher or administrator could have handled it in a more sensitive way, and you wouldn't have had the same outcome to this case. That's a really high bar, because a lot of high school kids try to help their friends, and their first instinct is not to go to an adult and make that report. So I want all of us to understand that, because that case is really raising expectations for how we expect kids to try to help their friends. And we do expect them to try to go to some adult in the school setting to share the concerns that they have. So that case surprised me a little bit, but we do need to understand that that is one of the important cases that has recently been decided by the commissioner. And I do give you the citation for that in the PowerPoint. Other questions on that particular case? Another important case I wanted to mention. We had a student who was posting YouTube videos. High school student was posting YouTube videos that were very demeaning to a classmate, making fun of the classmate for a number of characteristics. Investigation was done. School district said this was a form of harassment, intimidation, or bullying. The student and their parents sued and argue that this was a violation of the student's First Amendment rights. All of the behavior in question was happening outside of school, and the argument was we can't censor student speech. If one child doesn't like another student and wants to express their opinion about that student and does it outside of school, it would be a violation of the First Amendment for us to find that that's bullying to punish the student. Federal court looked at that particular case from Greater Egg Harbor and said no, we have to balance First Amendment rights with other rights that involve the protection of other students, and basically found that the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights is constitutional, at least when it comes to a First Amendment challenge to the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. It wasn't a surprising case, but it was important for a federal court to decide that issue as well, to kind of reinforce that we do have the right to address behavior that happens outside of school if it's likely to cause disruption in school. So that's not a new concept. We have a case in New Jersey that goes back to 1970, RR versus Shore Regional, that involved one student threatening another student with a knife. All the behavior happened outside of school, but the school district was found to be within their rights when they imposed discipline, because now one student was fearful of another and it was impacting the student's education. So that concept has been around for almost 50 years in New Jersey, but this was one of the first cases specifically dealing with the challenge of the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights and its constitutionality. So we thought that was important. When it comes to distinguishing characteristic, we do have some interesting cases out there. I may have mentioned a couple of these last year. They've been decided within the last couple of years, but just to reinforce, we had one case where a sixth grade student said to another student, "You're a vegetarian, you don't eat meat. If you don't eat meat, you're not going to have a big brain. You're going to be an idiot." Might that be something that one sixth grader says to another sixth grader? Yes, it could happen. School district investigated, found out the comment was made, and determined that it was bullying. What was the distinguishing characteristic? Vegetarianism. The student was being singled out because of his eating habits in that particular case. The case was appealed and the commissioner upheld that decision and said, yes, that can be a form of bullying, that can be a distinguishing characteristic. We had another case where a high school student said to another high school student, "You're lousy at basketball, you'll never make it to the NBA, you're probably gonna drop out of high school and become a drug dealer." And there was a string of insults that one student made to another high school student. School district investigated that case as well, determined that was also bullying. The distinguishing characteristic there, among others, one of them was lack of sports proficiency. You're lousy at basketball. And that was considered a distinguishing characteristic under the New Jersey Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. So those are just some examples that show you how broadly we do look at the issue under New Jersey law. And I think it's important to recognize that. We do have some cases involving employees who have been accused of bullying. And it's really important to stress that if an adult is accused of bullying behavior, that adult also has due process rights. So there was one case involving a coach, or multiple coaches actually, who were accused of bullying a student. And one of the accusations was that the student asked too many questions, so the coaches put question marks all over the student's uniform. And the allegation was the student was being demeaned and embarrassed, and the distinguishing characteristic was being overly inquisitive. You're asking too many questions. The problem in that particular case, that could have been a case of bullying if the investigation had concluded that this really occurred and really caused an impact. The problem was that the coach wasn't given the opportunity to have a hearing before the Board of Education. The school district mistakenly said only students have that right to a hearing before the Board of Ed. Commissioner said, of course not. Anybody who's accused of bullying should have a right to have a hearing, even if it's an adult. So that case reinforced that adults have due process rights as well, not just students who are accused of bullying. We had another very serious case involving the Barnegat School District, where a number of students accused a teacher of sexual harassment. Sexual harassment is a form of harassment, intimidation, or bullying under New Jersey law. And there were some really disturbing allegations about comments that were being made by this teacher to individual students. Apparently, these comments were all made when nobody else was around. So we had multiple students making allegations, but in all of these cases, we did not have witnesses to the behavior. And what we had in each of these cases were students whose parents said, "I'm not going to allow my child to testify. I'm not going to allow my child to be cross-examined and to be victimized." And in those cases, because there were no direct witnesses and the students, for understandable reasons, were not allowed to testify by their parents, ultimately there was a finding that we could not call this bullying behavior, because the staff member has a right to know what he or she is accused of, has a right to defend themselves, and if we're going to be looking at something like tenure charges like we were in this case, would have a right to cross-examine the witnesses. So that does send an important message that we do need to have some more direct evidence, somebody who witnessed the behavior who's willing to come forward and be on the record in order for us to have a finding of bullying. We have, and we've given this to you, a link that summarizes a number of the key bullying decisions under New Jersey law. Certainly not every case, but we have summarized a number of the key cases that are out there for you. So I did provide that link for you in the PowerPoint document. I thought I'd spend a moment talking about what's proposed and what's potentially coming next month. We do have a proposal before the State Board of Education. I feel like the attorney who cried wolf because I've been talking about this proposal for over a year. There is no guarantee the State Board of Education will vote on this next month, but there is a proposal that has some pretty sweeping changes that we should be aware of. So one of the changes talks about when we initiate an investigation. There are times now, for example, where you might have a young student use the word bullying, not even understand what the word means. Perhaps the entire incident was witnessed by a staff member, and it clearly is not a bullying issue. It's a conflict between two students. Under our current New Jersey law, whenever there's an allegation of bullying, we must do the formal HIB investigation. This code proposal would allow the principal, in consultation with the anti-bullying specialist, to determine that even if all these allegations were true, this is not bullying, so we can handle this as a code of conduct issue, and would allow a little bit of, I think, common sense to be brought into when and how we do formal HIB investigations. So that proposal has not been adopted yet. If it is adopted, it would also require the local Board of Education to adopt a local policy permitting the principal to have this option in consultation with the anti-bullying specialist. I do think it would be a valuable option. It would have to be used, obviously, in a very conservative, careful way, and not for cases that potentially are close calls and might be HIB. Another code proposal talks about how we contact parents. It would require school districts to take into account sensitive information that you may have received regarding a potential bullying claim when you're contacting the parents. So the example that was used by the Department of Education in considering this was a student who perhaps was being bullied because of actual or perceived sexual orientation. And perhaps that student hasn't had that discussion with their parents about their sexual orientation or gender identity. And the student may be fearful for you to be the first person to have that discussion with a parent about that issue. So this code proposal simply requires the school district to act carefully in how you inform parents about these issues. It would require you to be sensitive. If a student, for example, wanted you perhaps to contact one parent first versus another parent, if the student had some concern about how the information would be received, to help the student have that discussion. So it just requires you to document that we're doing this in a sensitive way when we are sharing information of a highly, you know, personal nature regarding a potential bullying issue. So that's an important proposal. One other one that I'll mention involves students that you pay tuition for that are sent to approved private schools for students with disabilities. So that code proposal would require some of the bullying investigations that are now done by the private school to be done by the sending school district. And we are frankly concerned about that proposal. It would be very difficult for a sending school district to investigate a bullying claim when the students may not know you at all. They may have spent their entire educational career working with somebody from that approved private school. We think it's better for the approved private school to actually do the full investigation in those cases. But this code proposal would say if the alleged bullying incident happened on the bus while you're headed to the private school, or it was a cyber incident that happened outside of school or something else happening outside of school, then the sending district would have to be the lead investigator. So if that proposal is approved next month, that will require a significant change in your practice, and logistically you're going to need to make sure that you work very closely with the approved private schools so that those investigations are done effectively and in a timely fashion. And we would certainly encourage you, if this does occur next month, to make sure that the private school is there with you when you're investigating, because the kids are much more likely to open up to somebody that they know from that approved private school. So that's another important change. Transgender student rights have certainly been in the news over the last couple of years. Many folks are aware that under the new administration that came into power in Washington, there was new guidance that came out that indicated that students are not protected according to the new administration under federal law if the student is being singled out because of gender identity or expression. There is a controversy over that. There are legal disputes over that. But really, it doesn't change anything for us in New Jersey, because New Jersey has a New Jersey law against discrimination that includes specific protections for students based on gender identity or expression. So I just wanted to mention that, because there is obviously a lot of controversy about where we end up on federal law, but practically it doesn't change how we deal with New Jersey law on those issues. Last topic I wanted to mention, there was a new series that came out on Netflix this past spring. And I certainly don't want to single out any particular show and say anything negative about the show, but we need to be aware of it. There was a show that came out called 13 Reasons Why that was a fictional show that talked about a high school student who ultimately commits suicide. And the student under this fictional show, prior to committing suicide, decided to create a series of 13 tapes explaining the 13 reasons why she was decided to commit suicide, and really blaming 13 people for what happened to her and why she decided to make that decision. It included a number of incidents of bullying and cyberbullying, sexual harassment, and much worse. We had built into this show issues of date rape. We had the actual suicide that the student committed being shown. Millions of high school kids and younger watched this show. Many of them watched the show without their parents, watched the show on their own or with friends. So it is very important that we be aware of this. I mention it tonight because the series is coming back. There will be a season two of this show that talks about the school district being sued by the parents of the student who committed suicide. So school personnel and parents need to be aware of this, and it would be very useful for you to engage with our kids if they are going to be watching this show, to have responsible discussions about the very adult, very complicated issues that are being raised in this series.
I just want to share with everybody, I've watched the show with my children, and I didn't want them to watch it, but all of their friends were watching it, and I would much rather watch it with them than let them get all these preconceived assumptions about it. And I do have to share with everyone that it is incredibly graphic, and it is incredibly difficult to watch. And so if you do have children and you don't want them to watch it at a younger age, to block it off of YouTube. It's on multiple ways that you can have access to it, but to block it, or be prepared to watch it yourself so that you can have the conversations with the children, because it is incredibly difficult.
It is incredibly difficult. And there are so many issues that are built into this that are very, very painful issues. One thing that we do know about childhood behavior is that the idea of ordering a child not to watch something may guarantee that the child watches it. So this is not an easy thing for us to simply say, you're not allowed to watch this show. Again, I think it's an important issue. It has raised some potential for good as well. There was research about internet searches that happened after this show came out, and there was a significant increase in students who were doing searches for suicide prevention and suicide hotlines. So there was some raising of awareness that there are resources out there to help. There were also some searches being done, though, of some very negative things online that were spurred by this show. So it had a measurable impact, both positive and negative. It is out there. I did want to mention it because I think it's an important topic for us to raise with our children. I would be happy to answer any questions that you have. There are so many issues that have come up with the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. I do think, on the whole, it's had an incredibly positive effect, but it is a complicated law with lots of nuances, and everyone needs to understand some of the challenges in implementation.
Does anyone on the board have any questions for Dr. Nash?
I'm just curious, is there a statute of limitations on reporting an alleged incident of bullying?
Is there a statute of limitations? So a parent does not have, there is no time limit for reporting a potential issue. A parent could bring to your attention an issue that happened, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, if the parent has just found out about it. There is a statute of limitations if somebody wanted to bring a discrimination claim. My child was being discriminated against because of a protected characteristic. There is a 2-year statute of limitations for bringing those issues. But to have a school district do an investigation, there's no statute of limitations. Obviously, as a practical matter, it becomes very difficult to investigate an issue that happened years ago. So it could be incredibly difficult to actually get to the truth if there's a long delay.
So I'm curious, because we send to a regional high school, so would it be possible then that a student that left our district and attends the high school could then come back years later and report an incident?
Yeah, so that's a good point. There is an effective statute of limitations once you no longer have jurisdiction for any of the students involved. If the alleged aggressor and the alleged victim have both left your system and are no longer there, there is no requirement to do the investigation at that point. The cases where it's been found to not be moot is when you still have somebody in your system. One of the parties is still in your system.
Any other questions for Dr. Nash? Dr. Nash, as usual, very informative. Thank you very much for coming this evening.
Thank you very much. A very real pleasure. Thank you all.
I'm going to take a moment just to shift where the meeting is usually conducted from my vantage point to the podium for just a brief moment. And I would like to recognize a staff member on behalf of the Board of Education. So at this time, can Mr. Brent Ruge please come forward? For those of you that don't know, Mr. Ruge is a health teacher here at the middle school.
Mrs. Grant, we can't hear you.
Pretty darn loud.
That was my teacher voice. That
was. There you go.
I know.
Careful what you ask for.
How's this?
That's better.
Much
okay.
better.
Very good. Thank you. For those of you that don't know Mr. Ruge is a health teacher here at the Clinton Township Middle School. He teaches our 7th and 8th grade students. And for those of you who also may not be aware, Mr. Ruge is a very accomplished triathlete. And I emphasize very accomplished triathlete. He was selected in the spring, if I remember. In the spring?
We qualified.
Yeah, qualified in the spring. I was selected by the United States to participate in the World Championships in Rotterdam, Netherlands this past September. In fact, just 10 days ago. Correct? So Mr. Ruge placed first out of the entire United States team. But I'm not done. Mr. Ruge also finished in the top 20 in the world. So, Mr. Ruge, on behalf of the Board of Education, I'd like to congratulate you on your accomplishments. We're very proud to say that you work in our school district. The Board of Education has a proclamation that we would like to dedicate to you, sir.
Really?
I should put my grannies on for this. The Clinton Township Board of Education, the Brent Ruge Resolution.
Whereas Mr. Brent Ruge set high expectations for athletic performance, and whereas he worked hard investing countless hours of physical, mental, and emotional discipline and endurance, and whereas he adopted performance priorities and vast goals, and whereas he ultimately and with great style and grace competed in the ITU World Triathlon Grand Final Rotterdam Championships on September 14th through the 17th of 2017, and whereas Mr. Brent Ruge distinguished himself as a world-class athlete, placing first on the USA team and in the top 20 overall in the world. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township School District Board of Education proclaims its indubitable pride in Mr. Brent Ruge. Be it further resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education joins with the entire school community in expressing commendations to Mr. Ruge for his hard work, perseverance, determination, and extraordinary achievement in the ITU World Triathlon Grand Final Rotterdam Championships. Did you fit that all in your shirt?
Okay.
And furthermore, with deep appreciation, acknowledge that he consistently teaches these same attributes to his students through his daily interactions, serving as a role model for them, as well as for all the adults in our community. Congratulations and thank you, Mr. Ruge, adopted this day, the 25th day of September 2017.
I'm speechless right now. It's funny, I just want to say thank you. We qualified at Nationals out in Omaha, and you get a good idea of who you're competing against going into the World Championships. And it was really funny because I met two or three teachers, and I'm like, oh, I'm sitting there with my wife, and we're talking with them afterwards, and we don't know how we're going to get the time. We don't know how we're going to approach this with the school. And of course, both world championships for all distances are in either in September or October. And I'm like, Mrs. Hammond's going to kill me. This is the first 4 days into school. This isn't going to go good. And so I call my colleague. I'm like, Mr. Hamster, like, what do I do? He's like, I don't know. Approach it lightly. So we took a breath of that. And I said, wait a minute. This is, you know, it's all about me. And this isn't really not fair to the students. And I said, you know, that's why I'm here. And I'm thankful. So as this went on, and I won't drag this on, but this progression of getting ready for the World Championships happened. And all of a sudden, you know, you hear, well, of course you're going. Sure. And Dr. Villani, who was here in the past, she said, I need to see you in my office immediately. I'm like, oh, great. She's like, how did you put in to get this time off? And I said, I don't know, Dr. Villani. I don't know what I was doing. I don't know how to ask anyone. I'm humbled. I can't even believe I'm here. So we sat down and talked about it, and she said, this was amazing. And then the support started coming from Mrs. Hammond and support. And then all of a sudden, my colleague has a big mouth. He started telling everyone, and everybody seemed to know. And it was awesome. And my whole point is these other teachers, they didn't have as easy as a time to go enjoy it. They had a difficult time getting the time off. They had a difficult time communicating with their administrators about it. And all I got was an overwhelming, like, go enjoy it and have fun. And Mrs. Hammond started the first day of school with a collage, which is embarrassing of me and my spandex. But the collage was not about, it was about myself, but it was about, you know, setting goals for the students and saying this is our theme for the year. And I said, wow, this is really cool. This is not about me. Like, it's bigger. So my point is, in race day, as I was racing along and cruising through, I started running through the run course, and you know, it is about you, but then all of a sudden somebody yelled, like, go USA. And you sit there and you're like, wait a minute, this isn't about me. It's about something bigger than myself. And I never expected that. And I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to experience that. because not everybody gets to do that. And it was awesome. I could drag on stories upon stories, but I just want to say thank you. And, you know, it was so easy, and I could go over and enjoy it. You know, anywhere from Mrs. Hammond and the staff has been awesome. I keep wanting to share all my stories at once, but I can't. And I just want to say thank you to the school board, and it's been awesome. So thank you very much.
I'd like to move on to the report of the Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Feyander.
Yes.
Good evening, everyone. I first of all want to say congratulations to Mr. Ruge. You are such an inspiration, and thank you for coming, and I'll see you in my office. Okay. This evening we had presentation by Dr. Nash, and by the way, he's a triathlon, we learned tonight, so we have a theme going here. On the HIB, our enrollment report is at 1,257 students. I have no suspensions to report, and our HIB investigations yield no, what is the correct term I should use? Unfounded. I have spent about a month now in the district, and I wanted you to see what I've seen for the last month through my eyes. So I invite you to watch a two minute and 38 second video. I may need a little help with the volume.
Thank you.
six back-to-school nights, an ice cream social, a pizza party, a new baby with more to come. I have had the most incredible month in the Clinton Township School District. I thank the board, I thank the staff, and let's keep up the good work. Thank you.
I'm looking for a motion, please, for 18SU003 to 18SU005, please.
Motion.
Ms. McLaughlin. Looking for a second, please.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Olowski. Any questions for Dr. Fiander this evening? No, seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. DeMurley.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky.
Yes.
Mrs. Radogada.
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm looking for a motion, please, to go into a 10-minute recess.
Motion.
Mrs. McLaughlin, a second, please.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Vanderhoff. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? We're in a short recess. Thank you. I'm looking for motion, please, to reconvene the meeting.
Motion.
Mr. Vanderhoff, a second, please.
Second.
Mrs. McLaughlin, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? We are back in session. Over the last 10 days, the Clinton Township Board of Education and the leadership of the Clinton Township Education Association have worked very closely to come to an agreement on how we will work together and proceed. And we have a joint statement that both parties have agreed to and agreed to read this evening. So I'd like to read that to you. The Clinton Township Education Association and the Clinton Township Board of Education are pleased to announce their joint commitment to a collaborative process that will include the development and implementation of a core set of values that will guide each of the parties through all aspects of our relationship. It is the hope of the board and the association that this process will transform our district into one that unites all of us as we pursue our mutual goal of providing the highest level of education possible to the children of Clinton Township. And as we begin the development of our core values, we will commence collective bargaining with the association and the board's negotiations team. And on behalf of the Board of Education, I would like to thank both Ellen and Christine for their commitment to this process, and we are excited and very eager to work with you. Thank you. To continue on the under President's comments, I would like to bring attention to action items found on tonight's agenda, found under the Personnel Committee. These two action items, one of them will eliminate the Director of Curriculum and Director of Technology positions in the district. The second action item will provide the board with an opportunity to approve a new job title that combines the Director of Technology and Director of Curriculum position. The Personnel Committee would like to make this recommendation to the full Board of Education tonight. It was discussed in committee after Dr. Fiander made the recommendation for this change to the committee. At this point in time, I'd like to ask Dr. Fiander to explain and outline her recommendation to the full Board of Education. Dr. Fiander?
Thank you. Can you hear me? Since coming to the district, I had the opportunity to see how the school district's organized. I talked with our former director of technology before he left and talked about what recommendations he might have. I talked with our Joanne, who works in, I'm blanking on her title, Joanne Hinkle. There's Judy Hammond, Joanne Hinkle. I'm getting the names straight. And also with former colleagues with whom I've worked. What I found is that as technology continues to emerge and affect so much of what we do in instruction and in learning and in planning, and we have been operating, I called it an eight-grade existence. You have a technology department and a curriculum department, and we're in our own departments. And the movement that is afoot now is to combine that with a visionary look on how to combine technology and curriculum and move forward with a collective process. With this, we worked with the personnel committee to come up with a title that is accepted by the State Department, and we're calling it the Director of Special Projects. And it is, I'll give you the job goal as an overview. The director is a dynamic leader who works with the administration and Board of Education to ensure that the district's human resources contracts contribute to the implementation of the district's curriculum, new strategies, and innovative initiatives, both operationally and financially. The director is going to assist in developing district-wide evaluation metrics to quantify learning, advises all stakeholders, and takes the opportunity to help us to take intelligent risk and strive for innovation to work as a team and collaborate in practices. We feel that this is going to be a wonderful way to look at technology and curriculum as one piece. It is also a way for us to use resources more efficiently and actually is a cost reduction measure. And we're very excited about the opportunity to post this position and move forward with the Director of Special Projects.
Thank you, Dr. Snyder. Any questions from members of the board?
So, I have a question. So this sounds like a lot. How is this position going to be supported besides the one individual?
We currently have in the district, we've had two technicians. One has moved into the Director of Systems Management. We've posted for, we will be posting for a data manager, which is a registrar who operates with all of the data that we manage. We've advertised to fill the technician job for someone who can be out among the staff and working with those pieces. We have Joanne Hinkle, who is assigned to data assessment and instruction from a supervisory curriculum perspective, and this person will oversee all of that. So we have the technicians, if you will, and then we'll have the overseeing of all of these components. So we feel we'll have a robust group of people with whom to work.
Any other questions this evening? No? Okay. Let's move on then to the first public comment section on agenda items only. I'd like to open the floor to our first public comment section. To guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual, our bylaw 9322 limits comments to 3 minutes. We will adhere to this bylaw to allow for everyone to be heard in a fair, consistent, and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is only for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This too is defined by our bylaw. The board will make note of any questions or comments, but the members of the public will have at the microphone. If the Board of Education has an immediate answer to the question or questions, they will be answered at the conclusion of the public comment section. We'll gather all those questions at the podium and answer them. To the extent any action or research is warranted, it will be addressed by the board president or superintendent of schools as appropriate. No participant may speak more than once at this, on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on that topic have been heard. If you'd like to address the board this evening, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 30 minutes. Okay, seeing none, I'd like to.
Hi, Joanne Jitto, 12 Grant Way, Phillipsburg, New Jersey. I am a middle school teacher here at Clinton Township. In light of the agreement between the board and the Clinton Township Education Association, I just would like to say this. Words can heal and words can hurt, but in the end, words are meaningless without actions to support them. In this district, we very often hear words that tell how much the teachers and staff are valued. Yet we've worked 3 of the last 4 years with an expired contract. You may be thinking that it is the CTEA who did not ratify the first agreement that was negotiated in the last round, which led to an extended period of working under an expired contract. To this I will say, I was the chair of the team that negotiated that first contract, and I can tell you that we tried to convince our members to vote yes. But in the end, the association did not feel that what was offered showed what we were truly valued, as that is their right. And with this round of negotiations, we have waited patiently for this board to come to the table to negotiate. We've waited so long, in fact, that our contract has once again expired. For some, the wait was too long, and as a result, this district has lost personnel at an unhealthy rate. Eric Holtzcore, a company strategist, tells us, even the best business plans will fail without a dedication to consistency. I fear that if the employees of this district do not start to feel valued, we will continue to lose people at an alarming rate, which will make it all but impossible for us to operate with any consistency. I am glad to hear that the date has been set and agreement has been made for negotiations. I hope that the board will use this opportunity to use actions and not just words to say that this staff is valued.
Thank you. Anyone else like to address the board this evening? It's agenda items, but if no one else wants to speak on agenda items, I'll close the floor and open the floor for the first recognition of the public on any items pertinent to the schools. And the same guidelines that I said before apply here.
Hi, I'm Gina Hand, 16 Prescott Circle. It's very bizarre being on this side of the podium. But I wanted to speak today in regards to the teacher negotiations that are ongoing between the teachers union and the Clinton Township Board of Ed. I encourage both sides to come to a mutual agreement as soon as possible. I would ask the Board of Ed to please update the community whenever possible with information you are eligible to share. I have read several negative comments regarding these negotiations on social media. Since these negative comments contradict themselves, I can only assume they are hearsay and rumors. These negative comments do not help this process in any way. It can actually drive a wedge between the Board of Ed and the union at a time where these parties should be working closer together. As a former Board of Ed member who served on the negotiations committee for 3 years and actually negotiated the last contract for 3 years, I can say from experience that the only people who know exactly what's going on in negotiations are the actual people negotiating. Anytime this information gets leaked, it runs the risk of losing the actual message. I encourage both parties to work hard to come to a compromise, while at the same time ignore the negativity as seen on social media. I would like to thank the teachers for a great start to the school year. I once again feel very lucky that my children are educated here in Clinton Township. I would also like to thank the Board of Ed members for volunteering their time. I know from experience it is a labor of love, and I very much appreciate it. I would like us to all remember that our schools are in existence for our kids, and it benefits everybody, especially the kids, if this contract gets resolved quickly and peacefully. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hale. Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll then move on to the reports. The report of our business administrator, Mr. McManus.
I have no report, just to remind the board that the date of the next Board of Education meeting is Monday, October 23rd.
Thank you, sir. I'm looking for a motion, please, for action item 18BA-009. Hold on 1 second.
I want to update that, please. I'm looking for a motion, please, for action item 18BA-006 to action item 18BA-009, please. Motion, Ms. Vandross, second, please.
Second.
Second, Ms. Olowski. Any questions for Mr. McManus this evening?
There's, I just wanted to go back to the date of the board meeting. You stated October 23rd. That's a Sunday.
October 23rd.
Did you say the 23rd or the 24th?
I said the 23rd, I did.
23rd.
The 23rd, I believe, is a Monday.
It is a Monday. The 23rd is a Monday.
I did look in 2017. Seriously, Lana?
Any other questions for Mr. McManus? Any other questions?
It was in 2017.
Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. DeMerle.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes to all, but I'm going to abstain on action item 18BA-006, executive session minutes.
Mr. Malloy.
Abstain on 006, yes to all else.
Mrs. Olowski.
Yes.
Mrs. Rodogada.
Yes.
Mrs. Vandross.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. Before I turn over and go into the reports of our committee, I would like to make a statement about one of the resolutions we'll find under facilities and finance. And in this regard, I'm going to move up the report of the ad hoc committee that's looking at the feasibility of closing a school. So during the 2015-16 school year, the Clinton Township Board of Education formed an ad hoc committee to research and evaluate the feasibility of closing a school. Since then, the committee completed a demographic study, a capacity analysis of each building, a review of options for utilizing existing building space in the district's current structure, identifying the positive aspects and areas of concern for use within each building, and a review of the options for consolidating the space from 4 to 3 buildings, identifying the positive aspects and areas of concern for closing each individual building. In March of 2016, the ad hoc committee members presented information that reviewed the results of the research in order to determine if the district personnel could immediately close one of its 4 school buildings, taking into consideration the projected enrollment for 2016-17. Now, based on the data and information collected, the ad hoc committee members recommended to the board that it prepare to keep all 4 buildings open for 2016-17 and 17-18 school years. In March of 2017, the ad hoc committee retained the services of Dr. William Labrera of West Hudson Associates. And during the spring, Dr. Labrera conducted and completed a study in order to provide the Board of Education with an overview of potential options for the school district as it relates to the potential closing of a building. Dr. Labrera presented the results of the study at the Board of Education meeting on May 8th, and again at a presentation on May 22nd of 2017. Based upon those findings, Dr. Labrera presented 4 options for consideration by the Board of Ed. Those options include the repurposing of Spruce Run, lease of Spruce Run, to sell Spruce Run. And additionally, he recommended that potentially waiting for the possibility of potential changes in the demographics to see what actually happened to determine the most feasible course of action. At the conclusion of Dr. Labrera's report, the Board of Education made a commitment to the community to conduct a formal cost analysis of consolidation. So on tonight's agenda, action item 18FF069, it says, be it resolved that the Board of Education hereby approves the service agreement for a building cost study analysis by PM Consultants commencing September 25th, 2017 at a rate of $150 an hour, not to exceed $10,000, and the contractor shall be reimbursed for such costs and disbursements as may reasonably be incurred. So if the board approves this evening, this consulting group will begin work on evaluating the potential for cost savings
if the district were to consolidate four buildings into three. I'd like to reiterate, as I've said here, sitting from this chair before, that the Board of Education has made no decisions to close a school. We've made no decisions to keep a school open. Board is just in the process of a very in-depth fact-finding mode of collecting data as we continue to evaluate the feasibility of consolidating our school district. So within facilities and finance, I just wanted to give a little background and data as to what that resolution was all about. So Ms. Olasky is our chair of facilities and finance. Ms. Olasky, may we please have the report of your committee now?
Sure.
Thank you.
The Facilities and Finance Committee met once since the August board meeting, and we have 23 action items this month. Aside from the payment of monthly bills, there are a few things to note. There are several staff and or BOE reimbursement requests related to seminars, conferences, training, and or grad courses. As we have done in the recent past, the district will not accept any new students into the school choice program for the 18-19 school year. The district will accept attendees from outside districts for CTSD professional development workshops for a fee of $125 per person for the 17-18 school year. There are several items related to home instruction, tuition for out-of-district placement, student assessment, student aid, therapy, student courses and or tests, parent training, contractor approvals, and or consultant approvals. There's an item related to the disposal of obsolete and or non-functioning equipment. The BOE approves the submission of the lead testing program statement of assurance for the 16-17 school year. There are several items related to software technology services through the non-public technology initiative for Immaculate Conception School and Acorn Montessori. The BOE approves the submission of the ESSA grant application for the 17-18 school year. There's an item related to the Educational Data Cooperative Pricing System Program, which will take immediate effect for the remainder of the 17-18 school year. There's an item related to the Schoolology Enterprise Software for the 2017 fiscal year. There are several items related to transportation for the 17-18 school year. As Mrs. Grant just addressed moments ago, the BOE approves the service agreement for a building cost study analysis related to the investigation of the feasibility of closing a school. We received grant funding in the amount of $2,000 to be used for the CTMS body image and media literacy from the 16-17 school year. And last but certainly not least, we received a generous donation in the amount of $2,000 from the Clinton Township PTA, which will be deposited in equal amounts into each school's student activity account nurses fund line. With that, I would like to put forth a motion for action items 18FF048 through 070.
Thank you, Ms. Olasky. I'm looking for a second, please.
Second.
Second. Ms. McLaughlin? Any questions for Mrs. Olasky this evening? Seeing none, may we have a roll call?
Dr. Ford?
Here. Yes.
Mrs. McHugh? Mrs. McHugh?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky?
Yes.
Mrs. Redagoda?
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderoff? Mrs. Demurley?
Yes, except I abstain from action 18FF069.
Which one?
069.
What was it? Abstain?
Abstain from 069.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. Moving on to the report of our personnel committee. Ms. Vanderoff is the chair of that committee. Ms. Vanderoff, can we have your report, please?
Yes, the personnel committee met once since our last board meeting, and tonight we have 38 action items on our agenda. Action items 18-PN-058 to action item 18-PN-071 and action items 18-PN-073 to action items 18-PN-097. One of our agenda items approves the use of paraprofessional staff for the 17-18 school year. There are three resignations on our agenda tonight. There are three amendments to disability or child-rearing leave of absences. There are three new disability leave of absences requested. There are two items that approve hours to cover secretarial work while a district secretary is on leave of absence. There are two items that relate to an internship opportunity for a district employee, as well as a 50-hour field experience for an employee. There's also two items that request approval for rates of hourly pay for district employees for the upcoming school year. There is one that requests approval for pay for a chaperone for Round Valley School. There's two items that relate to position changes or transfers for both teachers and teacher assistants for this school year. Three items relate to hours required for IEP work. One item relates to hours approved for state report submission work. There are several items that relate to hours for staff members for training and district professional days. Several other items relate to hours requested for chaperones, curriculum advisors, and school advisors. Two items relate to the appointment of lunch aides at Round Valley School, and four items request approval for the appointment of full and part-time district staff for the year. One item relates to a student-teacher appointment for the school year. And finally, we have two new job descriptions, data manager and director of special projects. I also want to point out that there is one change that was made after the agenda was printed on action item 18-PN-094. The dates are September 25th to September 29th, and it actually should read September 25th to October 2nd, because September 29th is a school holiday. So with that, I'd like to ask for a motion to approve agenda items 18-PN-071 to 18-PN-073 and agenda items 18-PN-073 to agenda item 18-PN-097.
Looking for a motion, please?
Motion.
Ms. Zalowski, second, please.
Second.
Dr. Foy, any questions for Mrs. Vandroff this evening?
I had a question on 18-PN-083, which is the activity and stipends. Traditionally, when we get the sports approvals, it tells what year or how many years the particular person has overseen that particular sport. So I'm wondering if we could do that for the activities as well, like they're in year one, year two. And then my second question is video journalism and online news. Is that a new club this year? We've had that? I don't remember that one. Last year was the first year, though? Okay, I just think that would be helpful to make another column.
Yep.
Thanks.
Any other questions for Ms. Vandroff?
I have a question on 087 for Ms. Sandors for the memory book. What does self-funded indicate?
087, self-funded, right here. Dr. Feiner, we'll get back to you on that, if that's okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? No, seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. McGill?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mrs. Zalowski?
Yes.
Mrs. Redagata?
Yes.
Mrs. Vandroff?
Yes.
Mr. Demurley?
Yes.
Dr. Foy?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. Moving on to our final report, committee report this evening, our policy and curriculum. Ms. McLaughlin is chair of that committee. Ms. McLaughlin, may we have your committee's report, please?
Sure. The policy and curriculum committee met last week. We discussed several items. Five are on the agenda for this evening. The first is a reading program called Just Words that will support our curriculum. Action items 12, 13, and 14 have to do with policy revisions, first readings, and adoptions. And our last item has to do with field trips. I just want to note something under the policies. We have gone through a revision with transferring over our policies from New Jersey School Boards back to Strauss-Esme, which was a recommendation on our previous superintendent. As Strauss-Esme reviewed our policies, we found that there were some gaps in policies that we had recently adopted. And so what we've agreed to do tonight is just already adopt those previous policies because they're in line with current standards, and they also are in line with the standards in our district. So that's why under action item 12, you'll see several policies that are pretty timely, things having to do with the accessible use of computer networks and special education. We also have a first reading of a new policy that Strauss-Esme noted that we did not have, which is a written charge policy for unpaid meals. So that those are students, what happens when a student, for example,
runs out of money in their account. And our policy will be that obviously we won't let them go hungry, but at some point there will be notification to home that there was an expectation that those unpaid meals will be paid for. So that's our first reading tonight. And then we also have second readings from a variety of policies that we approved last month, having to do with organizational charts, evaluation of teachers, school travel, etc. And then we have two field trips tonight. The third grade will be going on a field trip in October 24th to Waterloo, and our fourth grade will be going to Liberty Science Center in February. So with that being said, I'm going to move action items 18 PC 11 through action items 18 PC 15.
Thank you, Mrs. McLaughlin. Second, please.
Second.
Was it Ms. Rodogada or mm-hmm. Any questions for Mrs. McLaughlin this evening? No, seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky.
Yes.
Mrs. Rodogada.
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Yes.
Mrs. DeMerle.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. To move on to old business, does any member of the board have any old business they'd like to discuss this evening?
Quick question for Mr. McManus. At our last board meeting, I believe it was our last board meeting, we did mention that there were certain bills that we were going to forego payment on or seek an extension on due to some of the cash flow constraints we were receiving. I'd like to know if there's any updated status. Have we brought ourselves current?
Yes, we have.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good, thank you.
Any other old business? Seeing none, I'd like to move on to new business. Is there any new business that any member of the Board of Education would like to bring up this evening?
Just one editorial item. When I abstained on BA 006, I believe I was really only referring to the 21st. I think I was here for the meeting on the 30th for the executive session.
Okay. So. Thank you. I'd like to move on to the second recognition of the public. If you'd like to address the board this evening, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this section to 15 minutes.
Crucio.
Hello, Lana Brennan, 21 Fawn Drive. I just had a quick thing about the policies. I know, I'm sorry, but there's literally only the one policy of the lunch thing on, and I know it's the second reading and I know it's stuff, but I like to have it out there and have it accessible to check it or reread, or I didn't get a chance to read it the first, I couldn't even find the first reading. It wasn't attached to the list. So for me, that I like to have it around, and also I'm very excited to hear that you guys are working with the teachers. I'm so happy. So thank you so much. Have a good one.
Thank you. Anyone else like to address the board this evening? Seeing none, Mr. McManus, can you please read the executive session statement, sir?
Whereas while the Senator Byron and their Open Public Meetings Act requires all meetings of the Township Board of Education to be held in public, NJSA 10, Section 4-12, B sets forth 9 types of matters that may lawfully be discussed in executive sessions without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10-4-12 to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during the executive session. Whereas any pending or anticipated litigation or contract negotiation in which the public body is or may become a party, any matters falling within the attorney-client privilege to the extent that confidentiality is required in order for the attorney to exercise his ethical duties as lawyer, the nature of the matter described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality is attorney-client privilege, personnel, and negotiations. Whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 60 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for only the above stated reasons. Be it further resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as the reason for confidentiality no longer exists. Action may be taken upon return.
Thank you, Mr. McManus. I'm looking for motion, please, to go into executive session.
Motion.
Second, please.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? We are now in executive session.